This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
You're listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Here are your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite.
Welcome, everybody, to take two of the Keyboard Kimura podcast here on Province Sports Radio for August 1st. My name is E. Spencer Kite. I am your host, as always, joined today by my good friend, my occasional partner in crime, travel companion, shirt borrower, the senior editor at Flow Combat, a man that hung up on our first attempt because his iPhone hit his ear, Mr. Dwayne Finley. Thanks for jumping back in, Bo. How's things?
Well, I want to clear it up that you said shirt borrower, but I believe those shirts are mine because we made a wager. And I don't know how things gambling goes north of the border, but in America, where I live, card played pal, those are my shirts. They're comfortable.
See, and the funny thing about the, and you're right, we did make a bet, they are yours. But the funny thing about it is that I saw a picture not that long ago that proves that you, in fact, do not need any shirts because you have somewhere in the neighborhood of 362 t-shirts. And so how the hell do you need my two? Like, my wardrobe's getting thin, dude. I'm a chubby man. Those are two of the only shirts that really fit me. So now you're making me have to decide between losing some weight and buying some new shirts. Or you could just send them back out of the kindness of your heart. I know you're not allowed to come to Canada, but you are allowed to send things to Canada.
Well, you know, and I'll think about it. You know, Christmas is coming up.
Merry maybe, Christmas, here are your clothes.
Yes, maybe you get those back. Or I think when you just said that, Renee shook her head. What's the number? Do you remember the exact number you folded? Yeah. She said t-shirt number's about right. So yeah, 392.
Yeah.
But my button-ups are a little thin. So yes, I will get them back to you.
Well, you're making that Flow Combat money now so much that they sent you a new computer. You got rid of Hal, rest in peace, to Dwayne's old shitty computer that didn't have certain buttons and always fell apart. He sounds crystal clear. This is how you know he has stepped up and is big time. And now he sounds good. He doesn't sound like robotic Dwayne that we've had so many times before where he's walking the streets of Albuquerque, hitting dead zones and dropping out on us. So he's on a computer. He won't hang up on his ear. Now we can actually talk about UFC 201 that went down on Saturday night. Capped, of course, by Tyron Woodley becoming the new UFC welterweight champion. The seventh new champion already in 2016. Let's start by whether or not you were surprised by that outcome and why. Because going in, you were one of few people that was picking Tyron Woodley.
Yeah, and full disclosure, the reason I was picking Tyron is because I ran into him at the Bellator show in St. Louis, and we had a talk, and there's a few things that kind of Tyron let slide there to say that, you know, maybe things weren't all on the surface with how this matchup went down. You know, he publicly went on record saying that Dana White told him Robbie turned down the Carlos Condit rematch. That's what the UFC wanted. And Robbie and Dan Lambert chose to fight a teammate. Now, that seems strange to me. And then, you know, when I was in at American Top Team doing a thing with Dustin Poirier, our mutual dude, I saw Robbie sparring, and that's the thing is, you know, it's like normally that wouldn't be a big deal, but we all know that Robbie doesn't spar, and that's what he's attributed to the keys of success, staying fresh at this later part of his career. But all of a sudden, I look over and he's sparring. So something about Tyron Woodley worried him, and we saw that that was his cause for concern was just because that Woodley bomb, you know, put his lights out. So I don't know. I had a feeling as we get in this game, Spence, that like, man, you know, because you and I talked to a lot of guys and you know that like something when maybe something as a slight tell. I thought Willie was gonna get to him. I didn't know it was gonna be like that. I don't think anybody knew it was gonna be like that. But yeah, here we are. Boom, one hitter quitter, seventh new champion. And as we were kind of talking off air, that welterweight belt changing hands is a very big deal because over the last better part of a decade, that belt just has not changed hands because there's been dominant champs. I think that's in the chaos pool now, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, we'll get to the chaos theory, and we'll get to sort of whether that's a good thing or a bad thing for the UFC and fans shortly. This was the best version of Tyron Woodley. We always talk going into his fights about which version of T-Wood is going to show up. Is it going to be that hyper-athletic, aggressive, throwing hands without hesitation version that we saw Saturday night against Robbie Lawler, that we saw in his UFC debut against Jay Heron, the Josh Koscheck fight, Dong Hyun Kim? Or was it going to be the guy that looked very pensive in losses to Jake Shields and Rory McDonald and didn't look great against even a overweight and not 100% Calvin Gastelum? He proved on Saturday that the aggressive, active Tyron Woodley is very much that dangerous, scary dude that we've thought about for a number of years. And as you said, lands that big H-bomb. As you mentioned in the first incarnation of this, before we got dumped by your ear hitting the hang-up button, it wasn't so much just the right hand. It was some of those feints early on that really set it up, got Robbie to worry about the takedown and kind of drop his hands and open up the space for that right to connect. If I was to predict this fight, and I mean, obviously I did, I had Robbie winning, but if I was to project a way that Woodley won, this to me would have been it in that he's out early, he's aggressive, he's active. But as you said before, the rub on that is that Robbie Lawler has historically been this durable guy that we've seen take big shots and take punishment into rounds 3, 4, and 5 and withstand some of that stuff. So that was the part that really shocked me about this, was that Tyron Woodley was really able to land that one big blow and just land it perfectly, that dropped Robbie Lawler like a sack of bricks where nobody else had been able to do that during this resurgent run.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think that, I think Carlos Condit went on Brian Stann's podcast earlier last week and kind of mentioned the same thing. He said because he picked Woodley to win as well. And that was his question, is with all the wars Roddy's been through, how long does that chin hold up? And that's the thing, man, is you have to wonder. I mean, Tyron, yeah, he hits like a truck. And we've seen all that before. You know, we saw Carlos kind of take two of them and still stand, you know what I mean? So that shows how tough that dude is. But at the same time, I mean, how many of those can you go through? I mean, how many of those – you look at every fight that Robbie Lawler, when he won the title and then defended it, every fight was a war. There was no easy battle. You know, the Rory Mack, the Condit fight, which I felt Robbie lost. A lot of people felt that he lost. You know, but it was that fifth round swarm, like you mentioned, that durability in those later rounds. And I think that's what people figure would happen. It would be kind of a stalemate first couple. Maybe Tyron had his moments, but then that animal, ruthless machine pops in and 4 and 5 and takes it back, because that's typically when Tyron gasses. So, but we could see in the opening moments of that fight against Lawler, Tyron wasn't rushing. He was patient, and that's the sign of experience. That's a sign of a legit growth that I've worked out some kinks. Because, you know, remember, I keep thinking that it was a shock to see the guy who knocked out Robbie Lawler was the guy who completely froze against Rory McDonald.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, well, then that's evolution, man. And I think that's what makes this sport great. And I know we're going to talk about a little later about, you know, dominant champions and growth. But I just don't think there's a big – I don't think there's a big gap between the champs and the guys in the top five anymore. Not the way that St. Pierre was, not the way that John Jones enjoyed or Anderson Silva. I just don't think there's much of a gap. So I think that we're going to see these titles can continue to change hands.
Well, and let's just get into it, because this feels like a good point obviously we'll talk about Robbie Lawler and whether all of those wars, as you said, he becomes another guy on that list that we're watching for his next fight to see if this is the start of a decline or if this was just a one-shot deal. But I think you're right. I agree with you completely that the gap is narrowed, and I think we're in an age right now in several divisions where there is parity amongst the top five or six fighters in that division. And it is a case of the right night and the right game plan and the right shot. And people want to get upset that there's, you know, some uncertainty to this. And they try to say, I had a guy telling me that it's not about skill and when anybody can go in and win the belt. And it's like, to me, the fact that these guys are able to adjust and make the developments that they need and fix the things that they need to work on, as you said with Tyron Woodley, in that 18 months since we last saw him, figuring out how to beat Robbie Lawler. Michael Bisping continuing to improve and, you know, develop more power late in his career. And as much as we want to say, like, oh, Michael Bisping never knocked anybody out, well, he dropped Anderson Silva and he put Luke Rockhold to sleep. So you can't just say those are lucky shots. You have to tip your cap to the Count and Jason Perillo for their constant work in getting better and learning how to turn over a little bit more and building that. And I think even you look at the women's bantamweight division, it's just a matter of, and we say it all the time, styles make fights. Holly Holm was perfectly suited to beat Ronda Rousey because she was able to take advantage of Rousey's aggressiveness. And then the flip side of that, you look at a fight like she had with Valentina Shevchenko in Chicago, where Shevchenko just sits back and forces Holm to be the matador, or forces Holm to be the bull and not the matador, and she's not able to have the same effectiveness. I think that's the case with Tyron Woodley and Robbie Lawler. I think it's the case when you put anybody in there with Stephen Thompson. It's just a matter of how these guys match up. And for me, I would much rather see go into championship fights where I'm legitimately unsure what's going to happen than go into another fight where I'm convinced and it's proven true that this champion is just miles ahead of everybody else. As great as it is to me to see an artist like Demetrius Johnson work, or Ronda when she was during her run, or John Jones at the height of his dominance, I, like you, like the uncertainty. I like the surprise. I like the chaos of it, because for me as a fan, and for me even as a journalist, it gives me more stories. It gives me more to talk about because there is that uncertainty, as opposed to saying, this is what you're going to pay $60 for, and this is how I think it's going to turn out, and that being the case. There's nothing exciting about that to me. Paul Chapman on the show for a good year talked about it was getting boring watching Ronda Rousey go out and dominate in under 60 seconds. I would rather have the Amanda Nunes's coming in and upsetting Miesha Tate and your boy Stipe Miocic knocking out Fabricio Werdum and having that turnover where I'm genuinely interested in championship fights than just seeing a champion continue to add another notch to their belt. I know you are one of the biggest proponents of the chaos factor, but at the same time, you're a dominant champion guy. So where do you land in all of this?
Well, you know, I think I'm gonna say that when we get to watch greatness in the cage, then I'm all for that, man. If we have something that we're watching, we're just like, man, during John Jones's ascent, we're like, man, this kid has no ceiling. That this is something that's worth paying for to watch. Just like Joanna Young Jacek, we're seeing something special unfold to us. They're not fighting pretenders, man. They're fighting legitimate people. So, but where the chaos theory flips in is I'm also a big fan of seeing somebody who has that opportunity, like Bisping coming in against Rockhold, where nobody's given him a chance and he gets it done. Amanda Nunes, nobody was giving her a chance against Miesha Tate. She was supposed to get trucked. She gets it done. I don't think too many besides, you know, myself and a small group are giving Tyron Woodley a chance. And they went in and got that done. And I think that's what's great about sports in general, especially our sport, because anything can happen. It's not like the Yankees or the or even this version of Chicago Cubs, my boys, you know, stepping in and playing most teams, we're getting to see there's always a chance. And yeah, I'm with you right there. When it's kind of up for grabs, and as writers, when there's great storylines that we can kind of bolster that, then yeah, I'm all for it. But then when I think about my love for dominant champs, you know, it goes back to, because that's the, Spencer, you and I got in during the same era, you know, the George St. Pierre, the Anderson Silva, when we were watching those guys, there was something special there. But now the gap's decreased, you know, now it's shortened. Now we don't know who's going to go in. But I'll tell you this, and this is, you know, this may surprise people. I'm not such a huge fan of championship fights much anymore, man. Like the title situation doesn't really get me. The perfect scenario of a fight that really gets me jazzed up is Jake Ellenberger versus Matt Brown. Like when two guys have their backs against the wall, and that's what was crazy to me. A lot of people were saying, oh, Jake has, you know, and then it came out after that Jake got cut and asked for another, you know, begged for another chance. But Matt Brown, he didn't have, his back was no less against the wall. I mean, here's a guy who was almost cut, scrapped to get himself to prove that he's elite. And then all of a sudden he's lost three of his last four, now four of his last five. I mean, I love those situations. That's when you're going to see the best guys. You're going to see the very best in them come out when the stakes are high. So those are the things that get me jazzed up, man. And yeah, the title fights, they're important because that's what most people understand. But guys like us who live in the sport, man, you put two guys in who have everything to lose, and I'm all for it.
Well, and the non-title fight and the importance and intrigue of fights like Matt Brown and Jake Ellenberger is an entire conversation for another podcast, because you and I both agree that not enough interest, attention, focus, support from fans is put behind some of those matchups. The interesting thing to me about the whole dominant champion versus chaos theory is that it's weird to me that so many people feel like it has to be one or the other. And really, to me, we're in a period right now where we have both. We have Demetrius Johnson doing his thing at flyweight. I will watch, and I say this to people all the time, to the point that people are sick of me talking about Demetrius Johnson. I'll watch that dude fight every day of the week, because it is artistry. It is amazing what he and Matt Hume and Brad Kurtzen have been able to put together in terms of game planning and execution and the way they operate on fight night. But I also love the fact that we have events like UFC 196 that just goes completely off script, where we get two major upsets back to back that just spin everybody out of their mind. We get stuff like Conor McGregor knocking out Jose Aldo and ending a 10-year undefeated run in 13 seconds. I think we need to have both. I think we're better when we have the two sides of things, because having a dominant champion like DJ, it's going to be amazing if the time comes that he gets beat for that belt. The same way it's super cool to me right now that Amanda Nunes goes in and knocks out Miesha Tate to win the title. And there are now four or five different possibilities in that division, rather than when Ronda was rolling along and everybody felt like it got stale. That's the other funny part to me, is that we hit a certain point most of the time with these dominant champions where it becomes, okay, this is too much of the same. I want to see something different. But that doesn't hold true when we are seeing something different. So it feels like it's another case, as always, of it's hard to please MMA fans and there's no happy medium, I guess. But if you're the UFC, if you can put on, you know, your Dana White mask for now, or the new owners, William Morris Endeavor and IMG, is having this turnover, having these revolving doors atop of some of these divisions, a good thing or a bad thing going forward?
I think it's a rough thing. I mean, no, there's no joke about it. I think the ideal situation would have been, hey, look, we're handing it over after UFC 200. You have Miesha Tate, who's very marketable. You have these other champions. You know, you have Robbie Lawler, who's very marketable. You have these things from a, because, I mean, let's look at William Morris is a, you know, kind of ad marketing. That's their group. And yeah, it's not probably great for them at this first juncture to be like, okay, we have Amanda Nunes, who, you know, nobody knows, and, you know, we're kind of down in that department. But I think it always, you know, we live in a homegrown sport, full of hardcore fans. This thing was built through, you know, internet and word of mouth, so to speak. And I think, you know, I think people live and die by good fights. So I think if they continue to put on good fights, which they will, I think they'll be all right. But yeah, I'm definitely with what you're saying on the tip that marketable stars kind of dictate how things move forward. And right now, that's not really the case in a lot of sense. So, but you got to think for all the kind of uncertainty you have, we're less than 20 days away from Conor versus Nate. And that's going to be huge, you know. That's going to be that could break all the records. So I don't imagine they're very, unless Nate slips and falls on a banana peel or Conor, you know, gets cut shaving.
Hey man, don't go tempting the MMA gods with all your talk of what could and maybe. And I don't think we're gonna, because we saw what happened with UFC 200. It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite with the super busy senior editor of Flow Combat, Dwayne Finley, whose phone is blowing up in the background. He hasn't learned how to, he's miserable with technology. He hasn't learned how to put that thing on silent yet.
I just put it on silent. Yeah, you're right. And I always give you credit whenever I have to do things like the Ask Bo, as you said, the phenomenon that it is. I always give you credit, man. People listening, you need to understand, not only is Spencer one of my best friends in the world, but he's also been my tech guide, like over and over. I'll be like, he'll say, hey man, he'll text me like, hey man, did you see this? And I this or that. And I'll be like, no man, where is it? Can you send me the link? He'll type back Google. So smart ass. But yeah,
you
helped me a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's between me and your kids, we got you covered. You mentioned the personalities thing and the big names thing and the draw thing. To me, one of the questions now is, does it put more of an onus on this new management to identify some of these fighters and give them a bigger push? I look at a guy like Conor McGregor, and by no means do I want to discredit his skill and his ability on the microphone and those things. But a big part of his rise was that the UFC recognized, rightfully so, that this is a guy that we can promote that is going to generate interest. He has an entire nation behind him in Ireland, and he's got the personality to have that impact and draw people in. So is part of it now that this new group and even the people that are still in place in PR and Dana White staying on board and the matchmakers to get out there and take a fighter like Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who you and I both think is one of the most impressive fighters in the sport right now, but also a superstar waiting to explode in terms of her personality and in terms of her moxie and the way she puts herself out there. Is it time for them to get behind some of these athletes that have that upside, that have that marketability that they can push, rather than sticking to the same three or four fighters that, you know, are coming off losses and you don't know what's going to happen with them? Is it time to start doing a better job of identifying some of this next wave and rolling out with them? Because Ronda's not going to stick around for a long time. And if she loses again in ugly fashion, are people still going to be with her?
Yeah. And dude, you and I have been on this push for years, but I don't think the right way to go is to slap a bunch of money to Sage Northcutt or right. even a Paige VanZant. I mean, I'm proud of the MMA community for recognizing that there's no way, that's absolute horseshit that Sage North, that, sorry, I don't mean to cuss.
No, you're fine, man. It's good. It's a podcast. Yeah. You can swear.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, son of a bitch. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think MMA fans are smart, and to see that Sage Northcutt made twice what TJ Dillashaw made on that show, come on, man. Dude was a champion. So I think they really do need to grab on to some of these younger guys coming up and get into it. That's why I'm over the moon that Yair Rodriguez is getting a main event slot for Salt Lake City this week. I mean, that's the right move to make. That's what should be happening, and not just giving Reebok deals to people that are visually marketable. Get behind some of these guys that are on the rise and that can make a difference. Because, you know, as we've seen, man, like, dude, if this makes you feel old, like it makes me feel old, you and I have been in this sport now where two generations have passed. You know, the Icemans are gone, the George St. Pierre's are gone, Anderson Silva's on his, you know, his way out. So now who's this next crest of stars? And I think they were right with how they kind of started working with Conor. I just think it was too much too fast. I mean, I think they created a Frankenstein there. I think you need to spread it out, but you definitely need to get things moving and not to do it by doing that damn show, the Dana White looking for a fighter. Like, that's good for entertainment, but don't slap these guys with any kind of preferential treatment just because they were on that damn show. Oh, but by the way, let me throw this in, and I know we'll move on, but, and I'm sure you guys, some of you listening, have seen the marketing. I kid you not, Flow Combat on Saturday is streaming an NEF show for Dana White looking for a fight. It's a UFC and Flow Combat working in conjunction to promote the same things. I wish I could say it's been an easy conjunction, but it's happening. So Dana White is shooting his show where he's looking for UFC talent that on a fight that is streaming on Flow Combat. So anything can happen. What did Kevin Garnett say, Spencer?
Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. But that's back to the point. They need to, and I think UFC does a good job of going out and finding these next up and comers. But I'll tell you what, in the 4 months that, well, it hasn't even been 4 months yet, but in the 4 months of Flow Combat, we've seen on the shows that we promote, I've seen a lot of talent coming up. Man, there's this kid, and Hector Castro is going to be so mad at me, but there's this kid, Dylan Calla, that fights out of South Carolina that is absolutely bonkers tough. Adam Townsend just beat Junior Sun Tsao over in China. You know, I think you have to find these guys in this early stage because it's not reading anymore. Now there's MMA shows 4 or 5 times a week. So, yeah, I think the UFC, it's a little harder for them. But then there's that kid that fights Titans, Jose Shorty Torres. There's a lot of guys coming up that are going to be watching. Carlos Condit's protege, Jalen Turner, good kid, man, and he's going to be tough. Tarantula MMA, look him up on Instagram, I believe. But, yeah, I think that's what you got to do now. I think you have to get in coming up before they make it to the UFC, and then once they hit their mark, then you can start the marketing push.
Well, and the interesting thing that I agree with 100% that you mentioned in there is not just going all in on the Sage Northcutts of the world. And I wrote a piece on this last week coming out of the Valentina Shevchenko win over Holly Holm, talking about the UFC needing to do a better job of identifying people. Sage is easy. You look at him, he's an action figure with perfect manners, simple as a put him on a poster. But the talent isn't necessarily there. He's not yet at that point where the push matches the experience and the skill level. Same with Paige VanZant that we saw in the past. I honestly think they have rushed Rose Namajunas to a point that it's maybe detrimental for her overall. I want to see how she rebounds from this loss to Karolina Kowalkiewicz on the weekend. But then at the same time, as you said, you have a guy like Yair Rodriguez. It's so good to see that he's getting that main event shot. I think his next fight needs to be on Fox. I think there needs to be a huge push behind him. And you look at a fighter like Shevchenko, who speaks 3 languages, who appeals in South America, in Europe, and can play in North America because she is a good-looking woman who is also a badass. Like, why aren't those fighters the ones that are being identified and recognized beforehand? To me, it's always been about 3 or 4 steps before they are main event possible is when you need to be in on them and when you need to be promoting them. I agree with you 100% that there needs to be a greater focus on these regional fight cards. And if there was, and I don't know whether you agree with me or not, I still believe that the UFC would benefit from having its own regional promotion or a series of them in different locations where we see them on Fight Pass regularly and they're brought up and can be promoted that way because you get introduced to them early rather than having to go and You know, have your Flow Combat subscription so you can watch these fights, or having a Fight Pass subscription and getting up at whatever hour, or spending another Friday watching a Titan fight, or one of these different shows that are going on. It just feels like they're behind a little bit, and they're always that they're more reactive than they are proactive, and they tend to double down on these fighters that they've established so far. Like, it's crazy to me that these promos for UFC 202 are 100% about Conor McGregor. It sucks for Nate Diaz that they get him on Conan and they bring Conor on. I love that he tweeted out, "They played me again." That was hilarious to me, because Nate Diaz is the one that won that fight, first and foremost. Secondly, if he goes out and beats Conor McGregor again, you have no choice but to promote him. But you have done everything in the build-up to this fight to make him feel like he's the afterthought, when you should just be splitting it down the middle, because they are both stars. They both have drawing power. Don't put yourself in a position where you're limited and you have to rebound afterwards. Give yourself the best opportunity going forward. That applies to that fight and to prospects on the rise. Get in early. And to me, it's better to be wrong than it's better to be late.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree with you, man. That, like, I think they're, I mean, I love, and I say that cynically, I love that this all the promo stuff has been like, you know, Conor took this fight on short notice and Conor's the one that took the risk. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, and then I love how they show the video clips, and they show the clips of like Conor tagging Nate up, you know. Like, they did better on this last one, because they showed, you know, Nate mounting him and throwing those shots, you know. Right. I think they rectified that situation a little bit. But yeah, man, let Nate Diaz go on Conan O'Brien without doing that spot with Conor. That's, I mean, come on, man. Like, but it all kind of feeds in, like, I get Nate's paranoia, man, on it, because there's nothing, as we saw in Vegas when they did the press conference before the weigh-ins, there's nothing Conor can say to him. And that's the thing, is that even Conor's best trash talking will not get to Nate Diaz, which makes him his kryptonite, because a lot of these other guys get shook. Nate's definitely not going to get shook. And now he has to fight Nate Diaz on a full camp. But what I think is that people don't read between the lines, because when I was in my travels, people keep asking, that's one of the things people ask me all the time is, man, how come this fight with Diaz is at 170 again? I'll tell you why it's at 170 again, because if he loses, or when he loses to Nate at UFC 202, he's still a viable commodity at 155 and at 45. If they were to fight at 55 and he gets beat, then Conor's stuck at 145. So, you know, I think this is all very intentional in the sense of how, like, they want to use Conor's star power. But here's the deal. He rolls up in there and gets tapped out or snuffed out again. Then how much of a draw is Conor McGregor? And that's the thing, as we were kind of talking before, you know, a guy like Max Holloway suffers for it. A guy like Frank Yeager, who should have had that shot, suffers for it. And Jose Aldo's in the waiting, holding pattern now, because the UFC is trying to use a star to where they feel he's the most lucrative, instead of doing what fighting's about and then fighting up and down a division. And you know that this pisses me off, because we've been friends for years. Divisional pictures matter, man. Divisional pictures matter, and money fights, while they're important, they just cause problems, you know?
Yeah, you can go out and make them, but they need to be at the appropriate times, and are one of the ones that you agree with right now. That doesn't make sense divisionally, but makes all the sense in the world from a financial and just it's the fight to make is the Michael Bisping Dan Henderson rematch. Yes, there are other guys more deserving than Dan Henderson, but that fight sells. Michael Bisping can get out there and sell. I mean, Michael Bisping could sell a fight with you or me on short notice, but he can get out there and sell a fight with Dan Henderson. The promo creates itself. You just have to replay his mouth guard getting launched into the 15th row at UFC 100 a bunch of times over. The fact that Dan Henderson still uses that flying forearm, smashes his logo, put Bisping from FS1 a couple of weeks up there talking about, "This still haunts me," yada, 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 and it works. But I agree with you, man. You gotta look at these divisions. You have to take care of them, because it creates a situation where you end up cannibalizing these weight classes. You mentioned Frankie Edgar should have had that fight with Connor, had to fight Jose Aldo instead, loses out there. Max Holloway, sitting on 9 straight wins, should be fighting for a title, probably gonna have to face, may even have to face a guy like Frankie Edgar before getting that opportunity. That's not good. That's not what you want with a young kid on a roll. You want to use that momentum rather than potentially snuff it out. And so as much as, and you're 100% right that the Connor and Nate fight is at 170, so that 55 remains a viable option for both guys. Connor can always go back and defend that belt, and they can always just play it as, well, 70 was too much for him. We figured out where is too far for this guy, but he can still go down, defend the belt at 45, and make that run at 55 if he sees fit. But they've got to find that balance. They've got to find a way to market stars and use stars, but also cultivate some other ones and get behind some new talent on the rise and introduce them to people early to get them to buy in. It's always going to be subjective. You can't force people to love Demetrius Johnson and want to pay to see him, but you also don't have to just rely on the same 4 people time and again and only push the Sage Northcutts of the world or the Paige Van Zants of the world that are the simple, easy, marketable people. You need to go out and unearth some of these people as well. It will help you long run. It will help you short term. It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite with Dwayne Finley of Flow Combat. Anything else from UFC 201 that really kind of jumped out at you? Anybody that made an impression on you, good or bad?
Yeah, you kind of touched on it, but I want to touch back on the Rose versus Carolina fight. I talked about it on the Ask Bo post 201, but I definitely think that I have a sizable crush on Thug Rose, just because I think that she's a fighter that doesn't need to, that, you know, there's no like glamour shots, and she's pretty, but that's not what makes her appealing. It's the way she fights. But what we saw, even though she lost, was an important chapter in her trajectory. We saw what happened against Esparza, you know, when she was kind of projected to be this next Ronda Rousey, whatever. Believe me, if you're a fighter and Dana says you're the next anything, then you just need to run. Or if Joe Rogan says, hey, you're the greatest at whatever, just run and go on vacation, because it's like a death knell, right? But Rose, we saw her bounce back after that disappointment, and she looked great. And then she looked great against Carolina. I just think this showed that this was a natural progression fight. I think in the next 2 years, you know, I don't think anybody's going to be young Jacek for a long time, but I think 2 years, a couple more fights under her belt, Rose is versatile enough to give her a hell of a run. And I think that's what we're going to see in this. I think she's going to be the threat to Joanna in the next, I wouldn't say next year, but give her 2 years. And I think Rose is put together enough to has a well enough round game to give Joanna some fits, because we've seen Joanna's, you know, she is she's susceptible to the takedown, and Rose has a slick submission game. And I think her hands are getting better every time. I already mentioned the Jake Ellenberger fight. I think Nikita Krylov, at 205, he could be a breath of fresh air in a division that's been stilted for a while outside of the top 5. And I want to also mention Justin Scoggins real quick. I think Ian McCall made the right move as a veteran by not taking this fight, but I think it's in a Twilight Zone situation. What is Justin Scoggins online talking shit for? Like, you missed weight, and now you're calling a guy a chump for not taking the fight? I mean, come on, man. Like, somebody needs to talk to that kid and be like, hey, look, you missed weight, know your role, get a nutritionist, but shut up. Like, yeah. That's what you need. Somebody needs to tell that kid to shut up. But it goes back to Jake Ellenberger. I think that that guy, especially when the news came out after that, you know, he was cut, he flew to Vegas, he begged for one more shot, he made the most of it, you know. And I've known Jake for a long, long time, And I think that, and I couldn't be happier for the guy. But yeah, 201, I think, was underwhelming in a lot of parts. But I do think one thing is Wilson Hayes is I think he's going to give DJ a hell of a run. I don't think he beats Mighty Mouse at all, but I think that could be an interesting fight there. And now he'd be a major player in a division that desperately needs him. But yeah, 201, I thought it was okay, but I also said it was destined to kind of be meh after you have UFC 200 and sandwich between 202. I think it was just kind of like, okay, but you know,
it was positioned to be that card that didn't necessarily overwhelm. If it was going to do anything, it was going to be a sleeper hit. Obviously losing the DJ Wilson Hayes co-main event sort of limits it a little bit. And then losing the Scoggins McCall fight a couple days out certainly changes things as well. One of those situations again where people are all online saying, "Oh, this card's awful," and not recognizing that it lost a championship co-main event and that the UFC's plan as of last Wednesday wasn't to have Ryan Benoit and Freddie Serrano as the pay-per-view main event. They kind of just made do. Anybody that hasn't figured out yet that the UFC is always going to keep one great fight for Fight Pass and one great fight as the FS1 main event and not just put everything that we think is awesome on the pay-per-view, you need to start paying attention and doing better. I think you're 100% right that Justin Scoggins, somebody needs to take his phone from him, because you can't blow weight to the point that you're like, I can't even attempt to make this number, and then go out and be like, what real fighter doesn't accept the challenge because his opponent missed weight by a couple of pounds? If I'm not mistaken, he was like 6 or 8 pounds over. That's not anything to sneeze at, especially when Ian McCall is coming back off a lengthy layoff after a fight where his opponent missed weight and he lost. So dude did the right thing, 100%. Somebody just nab Justin Scoggins' phone and give him a little bit of a lecture on, as you said, knowing your place and knowing when to speak and when to be silent. I hope you're right about Rose Namajunas. I hope that a couple of years from now, she's built up 3, 4, 5, 6 wins, put this behind her, remains the confident fighter that we see moving forward. I think this has the potential to be kind of the Carlos Condit fight for Rory McDonald, to make that analogy, where you're just in there with a little bit more seasoned opponent. You have some opportunities, but they beat you. I really like the matchup of Jędrzejczyk and Kowalkiewicz. I hope they do it in a market that has a large Polish base, whether that's doing it in Europe as the co-main event of UFC 204 in Manchester, whether that's doing it in New York City at 205, or whether that's actually doing it in Poland, which would probably be bonkers, and I would lobby to get over there to see it and do it and experience it, because it would be a good time. I'm with you on the Nikita Krylov thing as well. It's funny, he's a guy that, you know, when he started his kind of progression and picking up a couple of victories and even just getting into the UFC, he was a bit of that, like, kind of that cult hero joke underdog that we all kind of rooted for. And oh, it's, you know, you see people just Krylov in all caps and exclamation points. But kid's putting it together. He's got 5 straight wins now. He absolutely pulled the power cord on Ed Herman on Saturday night, just shut him off completely with that head kick. He's 24. You can see the potential. And so, yeah, did he tap 2 years ago to a Von Fluchoke? 100%. Has he gotten better since then? Absolutely. Do we need young talent like that in a division that, as you said, has been stale for a long time? Completely. So hopefully he continues to ascend, keeps moving up the ranks and keeps doing well. But I agree with you that this card was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was solid from top to bottom. Like I said earlier, it suffered by losing a couple of fights and having a couple of things fall through. I feel bad for Wilson Hayes because he's not going to get the next title shot. That's going to go to whatever regional flyweight champion wins the next installment of The Ultimate Fighter. But he is a dude to continue to watch. I think that performance on Saturday night sort of opened up some eyes and made people a little bit more cognizant of him as a contender. Before I let you go, and to wrap up here on this edition of the Keyboard Kimura podcast, I would be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the very good things you guys have going on over at Flow Combat, a great team you have built up with the young kid Hunter Homestek and Jim Edwards and Jose Youngs and Tony Reed and just a bunch of really good people. But the biggest phenomenon right now, the thing that is driving interest in a lot of ways, is your Facebook Live Ask Bo series, where you just get on there and talk to people about absolutely whatever they want. As a dude that we have talked about struggles with technology, how did you become a Facebook Live star, and what has it been like having that series and kicking it off for you?
It's funny because, of course, since I struggle with technology, it was not my idea. if that comes as any surprise to you, Hunter, you know, Hunter said, "Hey, man, look, let's get this going." And I said, "Well, you know, I don't know what to do. What do I get on there and just talk about fights?" He's like, "No, just do whatever you want." But he wanted to work the Bo Cephas angle. So he said, you know, hashtag ask Bo. So what's been funny about it, and I'm really, you know, not to put it, not to be cliche, but I've really been overwhelmed by the response and by the participation, because, you know, you've known me for a long time, Spencer. I just ramble. And, you know, I don't ever take myself all too seriously. So what's been fun is, you know, the feedback people are giving is like, man, this is so real, and it helps us connect to it, because, you know, I just tell story. I mean, the questions come in. Some of them MMA related, but most of them are about the stories. So I just, you know, I just tell stories from the road trips and my experiences and stuff. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of running jokes, like people give me shit about this orange drink thing. And it came because if you saw the Musasi video where he said I look like Leonardo DiCaprio, and Spencer, you know my fascination with Musasi. So to see that thing, yeah, to hear him say that, and then I just kind of, you know, panicked, and I was like, "What you got there? An orange drink, like Captain Obvious, right?" So people give me grief about it, but it's been awesome, because I really think, from what I'm seeing from the feedback, is, you know, there's a lot of like buttoned up and, you know, polished analysis, or, you know, where like, "Oh, well, you know, suit and tie kind of, well, this is what happened." And you know me, man, I don't think my opinion means shit. So that's why I stick to the fighter features. But the Ask Bo thing is, you know, people chime in, and people at, you know, in these stories, it's kind of like story hour with old Bo Cephas. And people love it, man. And that's what's, it's been remarkable. And then, of course, you know me, I went on vacation last week, and I don't ever really take a vacation away from this MMA thing. But then you got Jimmy Miller coming out straight up Ultimate Warrior style. And what's hilarious about that is, we were joking before I went on, I thought he was going to do the Macho Man thing again. So if you watch the video, my reaction is genuine, because I'm expecting to see the Macho Man come through, and I got the damn Ultimate Warrior behind me, you know, talking about, you know, the beast is starting to swell, you know, I'm like, but we had a bet. And when he comes up to Vancouver, I ask him about this. We had a bet that whoever broke first, like, he's like, you know, if I laugh before he laughs, then I owe him a case of beer, and if vice versa. And of course, he got me to break. As soon as I saw that Speedo, I couldn't help myself. You know, it was, it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, to your listeners, we do them every Thursday at noon. You come on live, Flow Combat's Facebook page, and just start asking questions. Or if you want to do it on Twitter, hashtag Ask Bo, you can literally ask me anything you want, and I will tell you how I feel about it. No filter at all. It's kind of like a Reddit AMA type thing. But it's been great, man. Like the thousands of views. You know what I mean? Like this, it's been bonkers.
Yeah, that's so. A couple clarifications. That's 12 o'clock Eastern time, so they always happen like just at the weirdest time for me. So I haven't jumped on one live, but I watch them back always, because you and Story Hour is always good times. And like you said, you never know what you're going to get. You're going to get the Ultimate Miller every once in a while running in the background. the Musasi thing, that it wasn't an Ask Bo, but I know that that made your day. Also, I believe that week was the same week that you actually met and had a little run-in with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes. So
the worlds collided, everything has come together. But it's awesome to see, man. You guys have really hit the ground running at Flow Combat. And in an industry where sameness kind of plagues the industry and everybody's doing the same thing, you guys have found a lane for yourself and forged it very quickly. Obviously, every site is gonna have some things that they have to do, but you've got some voices over there and some people over there that are taking it in a different direction. I love that your boy Hunter is getting a chance to do a lot more. He's a dude that you all need to be looking out for, not just plugging him because he's a friend that whips my ass at Words with Friends all the time. If anything, I should be burying him for that. But the kid is good. Look him up. Follow Flow Combat. Sign up for their streaming deal. As Dwayne said earlier, you will get to check out a NEF show this weekend that Dana White will be at for a Looking for a Fight series. There's all kinds of great stuff that comes with it. You get to watch collegiate and international wrestling if you're into that stuff on Flow Wrestling. Plus you get Dwayne's stuff. Plus you get Ask Bo. It's good times, man. And congratulations to you guys on everything so far.
Thanks so much, man. And you know me, you know, because, I mean, you know me personally and have for a long time. You know, I'm extremely modest about kind of how I do things. But I will say this, like, it's strange. I feel like I'm in a groove lately, you know, with, you know, the Frankie Edgar stuff. And then, you know, story on Poirier, Saman, you know, Jim Miller, the Condit stuff. It's strange because you know very well that I was almost done with this. Like,
you were out the door.
Yeah, in March, I had already kind of packed my bags and was done with MMA. I thought I'd already done everything I needed to do. Plus, you know, what people who watch MMA may not realize is it's so hard. Like, freelancing is such a crazy hustle, man. Like, Spencer and I have been doing this for close to a decade now. And, you know, to know that, you know, you got to crank out 40 articles a month and you got to do these things. I mean, just to make enough to justify making this your full-time gig, it's really frustrating and it gets down. And that's why, you know, having a support system to have, you know, a friend like Spencer, you know, one of my best friends in real life, you know, to kind of to bounce these things off of, to share your frustrations with. It's not as glorious as people think it is. And then, you know, this Flow Combat thing came around and I was literally given the opportunity to build something in my vision. And that's why you're seeing like it is, man. It's features heavy. Yeah. I mean, we're not a news site. I mean, we don't, you know, they're a junkie and fighting and all those things do that better. But when it comes to the storytelling, I'll go out there and say, I don't think anybody does it better. You know what I mean? I'm different, you know, and you know, Spencer does his story's different, and then the Chucks, and then the Sean's, and then of course our mutual mentor and the godfather of all these things, Tom Gervasi. Like, that dude will crank out 5 stories a day, but they're the best 5 stories that come out. You know what I mean? It's nuts. So Spencer and I have been able to learn a lot from Tom, and we're lucky for that. And that's what my whole thing with Flow Combat is. I wanted to bring on people who are hungry for that shot. And to your listeners, you know, I definitely want to clear something up here that, you know, Spencer, he was going to come to Flow Combat but my budget didn't work out. You know what I mean? So can I swear,
Spencer? Yeah, you can swear.
Yeah. So fuck what you heard. You know what I mean? Like, like, Spencer's my dude and he's one of the most talented guys on here, but you know, I'm not going to pay Spencer $25 an article to ride. He's worth more than that. So that's all been a new challenge for me. It is writing, not only writing, but then managing these things. But it's always been about giving opportunities for me. And I did that, you know, with guys like Jim and Jose and Hunter and those guys. They're hungry, you know, that they want to make impressions. And it's an unfortunate reality in this sport that or this side that we live in, that a lot of guys who've made it, quote unquote, made it, don't look back and give guys the opportunities, you know. But that's what I'm all about. And that's why Flow Combat's kicking ass like that, man. I get so much feedback. Everybody's like, oh man, and you know, everybody wants to be a part of it in some form. I mean, we just got the two Al's, Al Joe and Al Iaquinta doing their breakdowns on Flow Combat. There's just going to be more and more stuff, but it's all different. It's like this. It's like a top down version instead of like a buttoned up suit and tie version. You know, it's just kind of what you'd expect, I suppose, if you know anything about me. So yeah, so tune into the Ask Bo on Thursdays. That's Eastern. Thanks for clearing that up, Spencer. I never remember what time zone I'm in, but yeah, I mean, in the documentary projects for a storyteller like myself, that's what it's all about. The Frankie Edgar thing was bonkers. It's hugely successful. And yeah, there's definitely more. We definitely have a bunch lined up, and you guys will see more and more of that. And yeah, check out NEF this weekend. Dana White looking for a fight. If you can believe it, best believe it. Like, that's happening.
Yeah, it's been really great. Those documentaries, as you said, absolutely worth checking out. So for everybody that's looking for this stuff, Facebook is facebook.com/flowcombat. The Twitter is the same, at Flow Combat. Dwayne's is at Dwayne Finley MMA. Follow him. Follow all of his boys. Just go back through sort of the Flow Combat list. If you subscribe, if you follow them on Twitter, you'll see the work of their guys pop up, because the site does a great job of retweeting all of that stuff. So check them out. Keep following. It's great to have a different voice and a different angle coming at it. As you mentioned in there, man, we have been fortunate to come up and learn under Tom and get that mentorship of some other guys that have reached out and kind of taken each of us under their wings. You're doing a hell of a job paying it forward with the crew down there. Very happy for you. It is well deserved. I love that you're getting the chance to tell your stories your way on your site, as we always sort of had hoped to do. It didn't work out, but I am happy where I am. I'm thankful to have my crew at Province Sports and Keyboard Kimura continuing to push forward. That's it, man. That's it for this week. I'm going to let Dwayne get back to figuring out why his phone doesn't work with Skype, because Savage has downloaded Pokemon Go, and get back to hanging out with Renee and Zoe and the kids and Boodles the cat, who makes Ask Bo appearances every once in a while. It's always a pleasure, man. It's good to have you. We will do this again soon, I am sure. For all the listeners, thank you for listening. You know where to find me, at Spencer Kite on Twitter and Instagram. We will be back later in the week. I'm actually having one of Dwayne's boys on here later in the week to preview the Salt Lake City show. So look out for me and Hunter later in the week doing it, setting that up. Until then, thank you for listening. Subscribe on iTunes or whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts, and be good to each other.
You've been listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of the province. Read the Keyboard Kimura blog on theprovince.com, follow them on Twitter at Keyboard Kimura, or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/keyboardkimura.